this sacred place. This place has been waiting for us to gather our dreams of justice and peace. This place has been waiting for us to honor it by opening our hearts and speaking our minds. This place has been waiting for us to fill it with compassion and loving kindness. This place has been waiting for us to draw from it a breath of common purpose. This place has been waiting for us to listen to the wisdom of its silence. This place has been waiting for us to fill it with the urgency of new possibilities. This place has been waiting for us to make it sacred by our coming together. This prayer, this poem from Reverend Stephen Schick is really the theme of our stewardship campaign this year. We've talked about it before in a service that had some contemporary music as well from one of the lead singers of Men at Work, "Waiting for My Real Life to Begin." We've talked a lot about waiting. And we've talked even more about staying, leaving, returning, dealing with conflict, surviving conflict, forgiving each other, and most often ourselves, for not living out our greatest aspirations when we've been in that conflict, by regressing a little bit, saying things that are hurtful, sometimes intentionally. For some of our congregants, we have talked about this to nauseam. For other congregants, we haven't talked about it enough. Healing, reconciliation is not linear. It is not finite. I broke my ankle in sixth grade, and I still feel that break when the winter is a certain way. Yes, technically it is healed. It's been healed for, do I want to do the math? But just, you know, figure it out. I just turned 48, sixth grade, 36 years. But I can still feel it. And the scar still shows me where the surgeons had to go in and remove the chips and the fragments of broken bone. I can't ever act like it didn't happen. Do I think about it often? Not really. But it took a long time to stop thinking about it or the consequences of it, because I ended up losing one of my best friends over my fall. For the first time ever, I went on vacation with my best friend, Kathy Narhi, and her very cute older brother, who always made me giggle so much that I would frequently, I don't even know if there's a verb for it, I would like snort milk through my nose. It was so embarrassing. And I don't know why we always had to drink milk at dinner, but I was so excited to be going on a vacation because in my family, just having my mom be able to take off time from work without pay was a huge vacation. So to be able to go away and stay in an A-frame in Michigan was very cosmopolitan, even more so than our stone soup. And on day three, we were running through the woods and saw an open meadow. And we were tired, and this was all new to me. There were lots of bugs as well. And so we were really trying to just get back to the house. And I ran, and my friends jumped over the little bend, the little dip, but I did not. And so I fell in pain and broke my ankle. Now, that normally wouldn't be that big of a deal. Of course, we were in the Upper Peninsula, which from Chicago was still probably a 9 or 10 hour drive. So the family met my mom halfway for the transfer. And then we went to the hospital down in Chicago, and we discovered that I needed to have surgery. And it was painful, and it was incredibly embarrassing to start seventh grade on crutches. But what was worse was that I somehow lost my friend through it. She never called me again, didn't even check to see how I was. I guess I put a damper on their vacation, and they were mad at me. That was hard, because she was really my main friend. So I started middle school on crutches, and let me tell you, I was not as attractive as I am now. I would part my hair in the middle, wear it back with barrettes that had ribbons in them with beads. I don't know if anybody remembers this 80s style. If you're too young to know about it, you can probably Google it. I had big Coke glass spectacles because I'm very, very nearsighted. And back then, it was very difficult to get thinner lenses. And of course, since this was the early 80s, they were like a brown and orange. And I was a little bit hefty, as my pediatrician so kindly informed me. So when I think about breaking my ankle, those are all the thoughts that come to me. And it's not so much the breaking of the ankle that causes me pain, but remembering how lonely and scared I was in middle school by myself. Remembering that I somehow did something so unforgivable that I lost my best friend just by being myself, my clumsy, klutzy, chubby, non-athletic self. So, like I said, healing is not linear and it is not finite. It is different for all of us. And yet, here we are in this space together that so many people have fought for, sacrificed for, loved for. And I'm not just talking about the recent years. I don't know if you can be a community of people and not have conflict. I've often desired to find that community. And I still can't quite seem to do it. I also wonder if it's possible to find a group of Unitarian Universalists who are truly like-minded. It's a common phrase, and yet we can believe the same principles, We can aspire to them, and we can interpret them completely differently from each other. I was really shocked to hear that many people, especially about maybe 20 years ago, interpreted the first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, not about equality and equity. They interpreted it as everyone has a right to their opinion, and no one opinion is greater than another person's opinion. Which, if you think about, that makes sense. We're coming from the Protestant Reformation, where we're used to being told that God speaks through only very select people, and all the rest of us are just supposed to listen, and often in a language that we don't speak. So it might be important for us to say that all of us have the right to speak to God, to listen to God, to speak for God, that none of us has the right to tell each other that our own personal spiritual path is better or worse, allowed or not allowed. And so because of that, we have been able to build this frustrating, beautiful, amazing faith that we call Unitarian Universalism. And now people like me are able to hear the words inherent worth and dignity of every person. And I'm able to believe that not only do I have a say about my own spirituality, my own relationship with the sacred, but I have the same right as anyone else to thrive. Not to just exist, but to thrive. That's pretty amazing. And yet, I'm sure there are a few of you, or possibly many of you, who don't interpret that principle the same way. And being here means that it's okay to explore it, learn from each other, learn with each other. We are able to do something here that we've not been able to do anywhere else. So I want you to just, for a few moments, settle into your chair, close your eyes, or, if you'd prefer, look across the room and fix your gaze at a specific item. Make yourself comfortable. Take in a few really deep breaths. Allow your chest to just expand and fill. How about one more? Now try to remember. Try to remember the first time you came here and thought, I think this could be it. For some of us, it wasn't even a think. It was, this is my soul's address. This is the heart. This is the home of my heart. Think about how you felt when you talked with people here and learned that they had had similar experiences or thought similar things about life, about God, about the world. How did that actually feel in your body? Did you feel lighter? Did you feel held? Did you weep? Feeling that at last you had found your people. At last the searching was over. And this is where you belonged. I want you to hold on to this feeling. Remember how the room smelled? Was it this room or was it at First Unitarian Dayton? Was it Miami Valley in Oakwood, but not here yet? Who were the faces that you saw that told you with their smile, possibly their bump, that they were welcoming you to this place? What was the weather like that day? Hold on to that, because it matters. And it was true, and it still is true.